My name is Allison Barden, and I'm the director of the Madison-Chatham Coalition. And I'm joined virtually today by Tracy Kohler, who is a licensed clinical social worker and clinician with Project Community Pride of the Madison Area YMCA. Thanks so much for having this virtual conversation with me today, Tracy. I really appreciate it. Could you share a little bit about Project Community Pride, a little bit about the program and the services that you offer?
Sure. Hi, Allison. I'm so happy to be able to talk to you and be able to just get some information out to everyone about who we are and how we can support them as we're all going through this. I heard somebody say the other day, we're all in a different boat, but the same storm. So I'm really grateful for this opportunity. And I love the collaboration with Project Community Pride and the Madison-Chatham Coalition. You've been such a support of our program, and just truly your program is such an asset to the community.
Thank you.
I am with Project Community Pride. It's a counseling and support program, and we help children, teens, and families in Chatham, Florham Park, and Madison. The program is possible through collaboration of community leaders in partnership with the municipalities and schools. Right now, the concern and uncertainty, which we're all experiencing about COVID-19, is really provoking a lot more anxiety and stress in us as parents as well as our kids. And I'm just so happy to be here today. Hopefully, we can give you some tips to be able to support your children and yourselves through this really hard time. I work for Project Community Pride. I also work in a private practice. My private practice mostly has adults. At Project Community Pride, when the stay-at-home order started, we immediately put into effect being able to see our clients virtually. So we continue to talk to parents and speak with students in different ways. Some of us are using HIPAA compliance video chats to be able to talk to our students, and some of us are also just using the phone. And it's really been wonderful, our ability to continue our services despite not being able to go into the schools and having the families be able to come to see us in our program. It's been incredible, really, how the mental health community has come together, and there's just so much information out there and so much help available for people as they continue to go through this. Families across the country right now are really adapting to this evolving, changing situation. Most places now at this point are closed, and caregivers really are trying just to adjust to this new normal, which some people are calling it. And there's absolutely nothing normal about this. And parents are trying to keep their kids occupied, to keep them feeling safe, and trying to keep them up with schoolwork. There's just so many demands on parents and children right now. And we're just so grateful that our services continue to be available, and we can really provide some of the supports, provide some of the framework to allow families to get the tools to just be able to get through what they're experiencing right now.
So I'm going to start by asking you what your tips are for how parents can talk to their kids about COVID-19. And we'll talk about children, teens, and then also those with developmental differences. So, you know, if you have to cater this conversation to different populations, but what tips do you have for parents to talk about this with their kids?
Number one, I would definitely say, you know your children. Mm-hmm. So you know what your children can tolerate. You know where your kids are developmentally and what they can handle and manage. I have some general tips, and then I definitely will give some more specific tips for each age group. Definitely don't be afraid to discuss COVID-19. Kids are hearing about it. Kids as young as elementary school, before they left, my son came home and he had so many questions, and he was getting really worked up over what he was hearing at school. And we were talking about it, and I was giving him really enough information so that he wasn't overwhelmed by it. I really started with, what do you know? And he shared with me what he knew. Mm-hmm. And I was able to not overwhelm him with too much information, knowing what he already knew. And I kind of took cues from him as to how much more information that he needed. Mm-hmm. I think we also have to think this is an evolving situation. It continues to change. So initially it was a lot of fear of, our school's going to close. Then the school's closed. Then it was, we weren't completely quarantined initially, where we could still continue to get out and go to like a public place, like the Great Swamp, and go on a hike or something like that. And that quickly changed. Having to wear mask when you go out into any store, that quickly changed. So it really is an evolving situation. I definitely think being able to reassure your child just what's being done in terms of people protecting us, that there are people that are protecting us from the virus, is important. They are affected by the change in routine, and certainly by how their parent or caregiver is managing their own anxiety related to it. Now, preschool age, they do start to tune into what's happening, and they might have questions about germs, doctors. They might even start asking questions about death. Preschool age, they really just want to know they're safe. You want to reassure them that adults are in charge and they're going to keep them safe, healthy, and secure. In general, preschoolers are very egocentric. Kids in general are very egocentric. They're most concerned about their immediate world, if they're going to be okay, if their parents are going to be okay. But often they can't distinguish reality from fantasy. So it truly is important. And I think this goes through all age groups, to really limit media exposure. I think one thing that I know a lot of clients that I'm seeing are doing is looking to the media, almost looking for more certainty or what the numbers are. And they're looking all day long, or they're having the news on all day long. And that is creating a lot of anxiety in many people, that continued seeking information from the media. But particularly with this age, I think limiting really any media exposure is very important. Early elementary school as well. I don't think that you need, they really shouldn't have media exposure. I think you need to be very simple with what COVID-19 is. Again, the reassurances that adults are there to help keep them safe and healthy. And you can give simple explanations about what we can do in order to stop germs. We feel more in control when we think we can do something. And that goes for all of us. So definitely letting them know what they can do, the hand washing, why we're quarantining. They start to understand some of that stuff in order not to spread germs. I think what's a blessing too is there's so much available for parents to access from reputable sites if they're not sure what to say. PBS has come out with things, Brain Pop has come out with things, just very appropriate videos about germs. They're not looking for more. I would not feed them more, but I would definitely be aware if they're quiet and you think they might be wanting more but just don't really know what to ask or say. Upper elementary school, early middle school, I'd say they're much more vocal in their questions, whether they're safe, how it spreads. Again, they might need some assistance really separating what's real and what's rumor or what's fantasy, because they are connected with their friends. They are hearing more things. My son, when he got very anxious, I just saw him getting very upset. And he kept going over and washing his hands. And it was a new behavior, which alerted me to something was wrong. And when I really started to explore it, it ended up that, and he started to cry and he said, "Mommy, I'm afraid that I'm going to be quarantined without you." So I think we just have to be very aware of what our kids might be thinking or feeling. Upper elementary, middle schoolers have much more access to media. So really what they're seeing, what they're hearing. I think we need to be careful how much we're bringing it up, especially if they're not bringing it up or you don't see changes in behavior. Upper middle school, high school, obviously it can be discussed in more depth. We really want to rely on reputable sources. So definitely reinforcing that, especially to teenagers, that they're looking up information, if they're looking up at all different sites, there's definitely more reputable sources that we can look to monitor the amount of media that they're using and really letting them know that more media really is going to create more anxiety around it. I think sometimes kids are seeking more reassurance sometimes through looking for more answers, but definitely see what they know. I would start with what they know and see if they want to have conversations, because I just think most important is to keep them engaged, to keep them talking, so that they can learn how to kind of manage their feelings through this. We're all kind of learning to manage our feelings through this. So I definitely think it depends on the age. And I think as it's changed, I think a lot more comes up as to the what ifs. There's just a lot more what ifs or what's going to happen. Is prom going to be canceled? Is school going to be canceled? Am I going to get to see my friends? Am I going to get to? So the anxiety for some is building as this has gone on. I've heard a lot of people, the end of last week, beginning of this week, say, I really feel like I'm reaching my limit, that it was, they were kind of adapting and figuring it out and dealing with for a certain amount of time. And now there's just a lot more surrounding it that I think that we're all dealing with. I think all kids in all the groups definitely need reassurance. I think it is difficult with teens, especially to be quarantined in a time where their whole identity is so much built on their interaction with their peers. Even though there's so many ways to keep them connected, I definitely think it is more difficult. There's the other extreme of teens who are relieved, who struggle with social anxiety. But I'm also working with teens who are somewhat relieved to be home. There's almost a comfort for being home. We're going to school every day created such anxiety. I think a lot of it is getting to know your child. Our kids take a lot of cues from us. So I think that is one of the biggest factors in all of this. For us to kind of monitor what we're saying, what we're exposing to them, how we're managing our own big feelings through this. Because there is just a heightened level of anxiety, a heightened level of responsibilities, demands that everybody's managing as this continues.
So one follow-up question. You talked about children, you talked about teens, and you talked about really getting, you know, making sure that you're assessing what your child knows before you even start these conversations. What about the frequency? How often should parents be bringing this up? Should we be assessing our child's anxiety around this and their knowledge around this every day, every other day, or is it just different for each family?
I would say it is so different for each family. I know that I have families whose children are constantly asking questions because they're looking for more and more reassurance. So in some ways that's almost feeding their anxiety. They're doing that looking to decrease their anxiety. So it's constant reassurance. And I do think it's important to give some reassurance and definitely to focus on what we can control to stay safe, really what we can do in terms of hand washing, in terms of being able to quarantining and what that all means. But I do think that it depends on your child. I think that more than anything, kids are really watching parents as to how they're managing their own stress-related response through this, which is difficult. So to see your child start to struggle with certain challenges through this can be exhausting when you feel at the end of the day just depleted from kind of managing your own demands all day long. So I would say it definitely depends on your child. Kids with any kind of developmental disabilities or cognitive impairments or those kind of needs, I think it's been for some of the kids that I've seen just very confusing. I know that their access to online learning has been a little bit more challenging. I do know that speech therapists, occupational therapists, they are doing things virtually, but that can also be really difficult. So it just is, there's so much and everybody's story is so different. And the questions that we have of how to manage and how to handle the certain situation we have, sometimes we just don't feel like we have the tools to get through, which is the gift that there's so much help available right now to really be able to provide families more support to manage the demands that are on them right now, mm-hmm. so that they can have the tank still a little bit full in order to meet the needs of their kids. I mean, they always say in an airplane, the parent puts their oxygen mask on first. So I think we're talking a lot about how we can speak to our children, but I also think we need to think a lot about how we can support and help ourselves. Mm-hmm. But I think that one of the biggest things is definitely limiting media exposure. And I know that it's hard. There's a lot of families who have it on all day long. I spoke to a student who every day at the dinner table, that's what the conversation is. I think sometimes even limits us to, all right, the dinner table, we're going to find other conversations. We're not going to focus just on the virus or just on, because I do think it starts to just, it's hard for us not to focus on it. I think just in general, we're all just kind of getting frustrated and really want to see things start to take a turn where we can find some hope that things are going to be different. I've also heard a lot of families who have said, who are trying to be grateful for the time to slow down and really reflecting on, wow, do I want to go back to the same normal? What do I want to be different? It's there's just so much reflection through this as well.
Mm-hmm. What behaviors should parents be looking for that might indicate that their children are experiencing increased anxiety? So knowing their children, how they are or how they were before this started, what signs should we be looking for that maybe something else might be up and that this is affecting them more than average?
Kids' responses to stressful events are unique and varied. Some can be irritable, clingy, some may regress, demand extra attention. Preschoolers in particular, sometimes you'll see them being more afraid of being alone, maybe more bad dreams. Maybe going back and regressing in terms of their bladder and bowel control, changes in appetite, more temper tantrums, which can exhaust any parent, more whining. School age kids, I would say some of the same ones, just in terms of all the groups, just changes in sleep, changes in appetite. For school age kids, not really being responsible for their work, not really focusing, not really being able to pay attention. I do think that anything that is different than how your child was doing before might alert you that you need to kind of take a closer look and see how to better support your child through this, or to be able to get some support to better support your child. Some kids are complaining of somatic complaints, headaches, stomach aches. I've heard a lot of adult clients that I have that are kind of over magnifying symptoms, where they really start to focus so internally, which increases anxiety. If they feel something, well, is that COVID-19 or do you think I'm sick? I've had my son ask that more than one time. Do you think that I might have it when he coughs or clears his throat? So definitely kind of being aware of some of those complaints if they're increasing. At this point, your child might want to sleep with you again. That might have been something where your child was sleeping in your own bed, and right now they want to sleep with you again. And that's really kind of up to you. I think we're all in a state of survival where if that's something that happens through this, eventually you'll have to go back and address. But at the moment, I think if that's not something worth fighting, then that in order to get the sleep that you need, then that's certainly okay. For teens, just more isolation, not wanting to connect with friends. Again, like any kind of sleep or appetite changes, any kind of physical symptoms they're complaining of. Ignoring behaviors really to keep them safe and to keep others safe. That would definitely be a concern. And we've had some teens who just are not adhering to social distancing. It just is their ability to follow those kind of restrictions and rules are they're just not doing. And that can be, again, I think parents are kind of frustrated by that as well in terms of how to manage that. Teens avoiding schoolwork, not getting onto their Zoom calls. I mean, I had in my own house, my son, who does have anxiety, he got very anxious to get on a Zoom call. He did not want to get on. And that was really hard as a mom. And even with the tools as a therapist and the tools that he's gained, that new experience was really hard for him. And fortunately, we were able to work through it after some tears and some talking. And at this point, he's really adjusted to the Zoom calls. But I definitely think everyone's situation is unique. I think parents in this position to have to homeschool their kids, this is just not natural. It's most of us are not designed to spend and work at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's situation is different, where whether there's people who have lost their jobs and that adds stress. I mean, there's so many different things. But as we look at our kids, I really think you want to look at any kind of changes. What am I seeing? Is their behavior different? But that being said, I also think we have to expect some. My daughter, who also has anxiety, her worry has shown back up, and we know what it is and we know what it looks like and we labeled it, but it certainly has shown back up. And there are moments where I have to remind myself that this is kind of normal, that this is just a really difficult time, and she's feeling at moments somewhat isolated and very disconnected. And as much as she talks and we have a good relationship, she's really struggling with any real intimacy, because even though she's able to get in touch with friends and do that in so many ways, there's so many opportunities. I also think that it's not the same. I mean, it's a different kind of intimacy when you're connecting virtually than when you're really sitting with somebody. Mm-hmm. So those would definitely be some of the signs that I would look out for. It's just any real changes in behavior.
You've given a lot of really good tips on how we can talk to our kids, signs and symptoms that we should look out for that indicate that they are dealing with this differently. What about for parents? What about for adults? You know, like you said before, we need to put our oxygen masks on before we put them on our kids, right? So what can we be doing as adults to make sure that we're mindful of our own mental health with everything that's going on?
I definitely think that the amount of media that you consume can contribute to an increased feeling of anxiety. Someone said we talked about social distancing, but we talked about media distancing, mm-hmm. because I think mm-hmm. a lot of the time we need to disconnect and stop looking up more information. Because that really is just adding to the amount of anxiety that we feel. I mean, if you Google COVID-19, the variety of responses that you get is incredible. And again, it's not all reputable sources. So especially if you're having increased anxiety, I think stopping watching media constantly, giving yourself 10 minutes at night, it's not going to change that much from the night before. If you look at it once a day, it's really not. You're not going to miss much if you don't turn it on all day. I think it's important too to really try to follow a healthy daily routine as much as you can, because I think right now, again, we have to let go of perfectionism through this. Being able to get out and exercise or move is so important through this. And it's not that you have to commit to a hour run every morning to get a benefit from it, but even maybe going on a family walk or making sure you're taking breaks and stretching or those kind of things is so important. What we eat through this, because just if our body is well fed, we're going to feel better. How we're sleeping. Are we sleeping well? Are we getting a good night's sleep so that we can feel rested and be able to manage some of our big feelings through the day that might come up, so we can have patience for our kids, so that we can manage the demands of work or anything else that comes at us. Being able to really practice relaxing. And I know sometimes kids kind of laugh at this because they hear a lot about mindfulness at school, and sometimes they don't really recognize the benefit of it, but it's really a way of us practicing awareness just to be able to reduce stress. And it involves just focusing your attention on the present moment and really accepting it without judgment. It doesn't mean you're going to just sit and not have any other kinds of thoughts, but really being able to sit and being able to just be in the moment. Because when we can do that and practice that, it's almost like building a muscle. You really have to practice it in order to get better at it. And I think that's the one thing. People say, I can't do it. Well, how much do people practice it? A lot of my clients that have really learned to manage their anxiety, they do have a daily mindfulness practice that they use. And I think that it's amazing what a benefit it is. Even just being aware of our breath, it's incredible how when our anxiety increases, when we get angry, how our breathing changes. That's a normal response to the stress reaction. So being able to really do some breathing to be able to ground us more. But there are so many meditation apps out there that are really worth taking a look at. Calm, Headspace, Insight Timer, 10% Happier. Those are some good ones where they really guide you through, and they're not a huge commitment. So definitely I do say to my clients that it really is worth practicing, not just when you're anxious, but all the time. So then it becomes something you can use and you can have in your toolbox when your anxiety starts to increase. Mm-hmm. And it also has proven effects on being able to stop the alarm system from going off in our brain. Our amygdala, that little almond-shaped structure in the back of our brain, starts to go off when there is an emergency, which we want it to. But in the past, when cavemen needed to run, their amygdala alerted them that they had to run, and their necessary system shut down and they were able to run. But sometimes what happens is when the amygdala starts to overfire and the emergency button is always going off, it starts to not really be sure what's an emergency and what's not. So we really need to be able to engage what's called our prefrontal cortex, which is in the front of our brain. And that's the thinking part, but that doesn't go on when the amygdala is on overdrive. And being able to be mindful is one way of really being able to get our prefrontal cortex back on in order to stop the emergency button from going off. And yes, this is there is a reason to be concerned over COVID-19. There certainly is. And I heard one therapist say that anybody who's not experiencing any anxiety through this is missing something, because it certainly is a real threat. But I do think the more that we can focus on other things, definitely focusing on what we can control. If we were to put a circle and we were to be able to write in the circle some different things I can control, it'll give us just let us feel a little bit more empowered. I can control my routine, whether I choose to relax, how I connect with others, how I'm eating, whether I exercise. There are certain things we can control right now, whether the school's open, whether other people are social distancing, what the weather is today, and I can get out on a walk. Sometimes that also offers some help. I've also noticed with a lot of my clients, I had one of my clients say, I feel like I'm a prisoner in my home. When we think that, our emotion is going to be anxious, angry, and our response is going to be we're resentful, and we just sit around and we feel like it's never going to end and we feel hopeless. So really being able to look at the thoughts we're having through this. So my daughter, as she kind of struggles with figuring this all out, connecting with friends, which is part of that teen identity where she's building. She sent a text to a friend and the friend didn't text back. And her immediate thought was, oh, she thinks I'm annoying. So that thought immediately created anxiety in her. But instead of thinking, oh, she must be busy. And it ended up she was busy. So just for us to be aware of our thoughts through this. It's also going to say this is a lot for me, because this is a lot for a lot of families. So being aware of our thoughts, also having self-compassion. I think that that one is just a huge one. I mean, during difficult times, it's reasonable. We experience strong emotion. We're managing sadness, anger, irritability. We're feeling overwhelmed and stressed. Even though we can't choose our emotions right now during the pandemic all the time, emotions just come and go. We kind of learned that in the movie Inside Out, if anybody saw it. We can choose how we respond to them. Passion is a tool that lets us meet our emotions, no matter how strong they are, with tenderness and warmth. I think a lot of us give a lot of compassion to others, but learning to be more compassionate with ourselves is just so important through this. Connecting with others. I think that is so hard. I've heard more than one parent say to me that they're just getting down and feeling just they're feeling trapped in their own house and just needing to connect more. Humans are wired for connection. We really, without the ability for us to connect in person, figuring out other ways to connect. I think Zoom now, it's really neat, offers, which I'm sure a lot of people probably have much more than I do, but there's so many games you can play on Zoom. My daughter's church has been wonderful having the meetings for the middle schoolers and high schoolers through Zoom, and they've done such fun games. They did a scavenger hunt through Zoom, and they've done all different things, which is great, which I think is another thing, is just to make sure we're staying connected. I think another thing which I think is helpful is loose boundaries. And that's one that I've heard. Childmind Institute is one of the more reputable places to look for information on challenges children are experiencing, teens are experiencing in terms of their development and any kind of just mental health issues or developmental delays. And that's something that I've heard over and over again, that if you had an hour screen time rule before, that might change through this, especially for middle schoolers and teens. A lot of their social connection is through media. So being able to just loosen up boundaries and be okay with it, I think that that is helpful. Being able to have some activities in your family that might be new. I've heard a lot of people pulling out board games that they might not have played before. So finding different ways to connect with your family, but also being okay with this is enough. I think sometimes just some of the pressure of social media on the different things you can do make us start to question all the things we're not doing. But definitely all the different self-care, diet, exercise, routine, hand washing, continuing to social distance. And another thing that I've seen a lot of people who start to feel depressed, who start to feel anxious do, is find a way to be able to help others. And that can be another opportunity to kind of refill our tank, is to really kind of reach out and see what we can do to connect, to not just connect with others, but be able to help others, which helps ourselves.
Tracy, I just want to touch briefly on something that goes along with self-care. So you're giving us a lot of really good coping mechanisms, a lot of really good tips on how to maintain self-care, how to practice mindfulness. And I just want to touch briefly on something that I've noticed, you know, that the media has started covering a little bit. as it relates to substance use prevention, which is what the coalition is really focused on. And that's this almost heightened drinking culture that has gone on, you know, across social media, that's almost come out of this pandemic. You know, we're seeing a lot about Zoom happy hours. Off-premise alcohol sales in the third week of March alone were up 55% compared to the same week last year, and that's according to a Nielsen analysis. Overdoses in Morris County are up. According to the Morris County Sheriff's Office, suspected fatal overdoses are up by 38% over the same 14-week period last year. New Jersey as a whole has 789 suspected fatal overdoses between January 1st and March 31st, 2020, compared to 657 in the same months last year. So we know that more people are consuming alcohol, or the same amount of people are consuming more alcohol. We know that overdoses are happening. So, you know, you're talking about healthy coping mechanisms and self-care, and these things kind of go against that, and they're unhealthy, obviously. So the other thing to note too is that so much of the recovery community is based on human interaction and, you know, getting together with people, talking, seeing, going to meetings, having a sponsor. And a lot of that has had to change. You know, we can't go to meetings and see people face to face anymore. We can't be in a group talking to people in recovery. The good news, though, is that so many recovery support services have moved online and are using platforms like Zoom and direct phone calls and other video conferencing methods. So just to name a few, the Center for Addiction Recovery, Education, and Success, CARES, is operating a 24-hour support line, and their number there is 973-625-1143. CARES will also deliver Narcan, which is upon request, in a safe, non-contact way. Also, Hope One, which is the Morris County Sheriff's initiative. The Hope One van is offering Narcan training via Zoom. And you can go ahead and contact the Morris County Sheriff's Office Corporal at 973-590-0300 to access that training. Also, if you go to our website at MadisonChathamCoalition.org, you'll find a list of recovery support services that are available online with direct links. So that's MadisonChathamCoalition.org/intervention-and-recovery.
We really want to be there for the community. We really want people to reach out to us if they need extra supports, if they have specific questions, because I feel like this conversation is so helpful. And there's just so much for parents to be able to, hopefully everybody got a little bit out of this.
Absolutely. Just
to wake up with a little bit more hope this morning and how to manage some of these tough situations. But I definitely want people to know that Project Community Pride is here for you. We are taking new referrals, and we are also available just for questions. I mean, we certainly are happy to answer a more specific question, because everybody's experience is so different as we kind of go through this. So there might be more specific questions about your specific situation that might be better answered talking to somebody one-on-one. The people that I work with at Project Community Pride are truly just incredible people. I've been so grateful to have a chance to work there and be able to work with the people that I work with. For more information regarding Project Community Pride and how we can support you during this challenging time, you can contact 973-593-8450. I'm going to repeat that, 973-593-8450. Or you can email Lisa Sprague, LSPRAGUE, at MadisonYMCA.org. It's going to be LSprague at MadisonYMCA.org. For more information, you can also go on and visit the Madison Area YMCA website. If you or someone you love is experiencing a mental health emergency or crisis, immediately call 911, visit your local emergency room, or contact the crisis hotline. And I'm going to give the number for the crisis hotline as well, 973 540-0100.
Tracy, thank you so much for sharing everything that you did today. I know that when I go back and listen to this, I'll be taking some notes for myself, and it's just been so valuable. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Allison. Again, you've been such a gift for us to work with and us to collaborate with. And I am so hopeful that Project Community Pride and Madison Chatham Coalition can continue to support the community as we move forward.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Tracy.